You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Australia and New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney. I'm now joined by our North America correspondents. Ronan Seagrave is in Winnipeg, Canada. Dawn Drost is in Orlando, Florida. She may join us a little later. She's not here right now. And Thomas Booker, well, you know, Thomas is in San Antonio de Bayar in Texas. Okay. Cut that over with. Lots going on. The ex-president of the United States, Donald Trump, has been arraigned, and this is for the second time, this time on 37 alleged accounts of the mishandling of classified documents. Later on, we'll play an audio grab of his response to his faithful after this arraignment. To you first, Thomas. Did you watch Trump afterwards? Because I presume Fox News would have covered this in full.
Oh well, Fox News and all the others had it covered. I really wasn't interested in watching. For one thing, they had his aerial view of his motorcade going into the courthouse. It's this long line of cars on a Florida boulevard, and then a long line of cars coming out of the Florida boulevard.
That's it.
Because cameras were not allowed. It was a very close. There was no possibility that there would be any kind of demonstration or exhibitions or any shout-outs. It was all just cut and dry. It was not. It was a magisterial proceeding. It's There are junior judges, I guess you'd call them, or they're helper judges who would come in and they would oversee, and they would be the magistrate, and they would come in and just see the basic business work, busy job of bringing Trump in, reading the charges against him, asking him if he knew. Then there was the procedure of they were going to waive his bail, and then gave him instructions about who he could and could not talk to, and he was to keep quiet about this, and he wasn't to discuss this with anybody else. And that was basically a rubber stamp procedure, and he was out of there.
Ronan, Thomas.
Oh, no, I mean, the biggest thing that happened afterwards was that he went to a Cuban restaurant in Florida and bought lunch for everybody there.
What a guy.
Ronan, it seemed to be much of a muchness in terms of nothing to see here, as Thomas referred to the fact that really all we were seeing was motorcades. And really, I mean, it's almost pathetic because this was very carefully planned. And the other thing I just wanted to mention is that they were concerned about riots, but that didn't happen, mm-hmm. Ronan.
No, it didn't. I mean, cameras are banned from federal courthouses, TV cameras, so there was no possibility of this being televised. So, it was a procedural matter of Trump arriving, being arrested, booked. We understand there wasn't a mugshot taken, but and then sort of brought in, detained, then brought into the courthouse where he, not surprisingly, pleaded not guilty to each of these 37 charges, and he was released on his own recognizance. There was no question of bail or anything like that, or Trump having to post a bond. I think, though, what is becoming abundantly clear, and I think probably becoming clearer to Donald Trump, two of his lawyers handling this resigned at the weekend, is just how serious this is. When you have people like William Barr, his former attorney general, describing in very direct terms how serious these charges are. Chris Christie, presidential candidate himself, but again, yes. a former prosecutor.
He's a colourful guy, isn't he, Chris Christie?
Oh, yeah.
He's back in the scene.
Well, he was very clear, again, how serious. And if you actually read the indictment, it goes into tremendous amounts of detail. Some of these documents are quite sort of high level, but this goes into exhaustive level of details around the photographs, around recordings of Trump, saying I didn't declassify these documents, talking about showing them to people. I mean, if it was a murder case, you'd literally be talking about a case where there's a photograph of the guy shooting the gun. So I think it will be brought home to Trump how serious this is. There is a real risk of going to jail here. Now, the issues then come down to when is this case going to be heard? Well, it may, and I stress may, be heard before the 2024 election. Where will it be heard? Most likely Florida. There's been some issues.
It'll be in Florida. It will be, yes.
Judge Trump appointee. So that said, we are also expecting, and Trump is expecting, you know, further indictments imminently. There's Georgia in relation to election interference, and of course, undoubtedly, indictments under the Insurrection Act. I think what we're also getting here is a taste of where Jack Smith, who is the same independent prosecutor here appointed by the Department of Justice, who's looking into this matter and obviously January 6th, as to where he might go in terms of charges against Trump potentially under the Insurrection Act. I mean, he's been charged here under the Espionage Act, but he's in really, really serious trouble. And I think if Biden is reelected, as I actually believe he will be, and if the Republican Party is as insane as to run Donald Trump with, at this point, zero appeal to any independent voter, he's going to fail, in my opinion.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, actually. The fact that he, you know, the Republican Party are very much having a fight over whether Trump should be the guy who would run the country again. Thomas, in Texas, if you had something to hide from the world, would you hide it in your bathroom?
Under the ornate stage, the performing stage. All my Sheikh friends from Arabia come over, I'll show it all to them. That's the one image that I keep, you know, you talked about Chris Christie and DeSantis and all these other people, and all I keep hearing are blades being sharpened and, you know, it's the whole et tu brute thing.
Okay, now this went on for 48 minutes, which is longer than an arraignment normally is. And during this thing, as I call it, he just basically folded his arms and said nothing. He seemed rather dejected from what I could see. And he did talk to his attorney from time to time. You know, he basically, I think the judge told him who he could talk to and who he could not talk to. He's not used to being told what to do, is he?
Oh, no, no. I think this was humiliating, but he deserved it. And again, the thing about this case is he's brought it all on himself. Mm. You know, there are very clear processes set by the National Archive Agency in relation to documents. Just for listeners' benefit, what happens with all other former presidents is that there is a process. First of all, it's clear around which documents have been declassified and which haven't. But there is a process that they follow around declassified documents for their presidential libraries. Now, all former presidents, apart from Trump, have gone through that process. And there's legislation around it. It's pretty clear around what happens. Of course, none of that happened here. He loaded up these boxes. They were transported to Mar-a-Lago. They were stored, as they say, in the bathroom, in the shower, in the ballroom. He is on tape admitting that many of these documents were not declassified. They were shown. And these documents do include, we believe, top secret nuclear secrets in terms of nuclear defense in the United States, and war plans, which speculations have suggested is in relation to Iran. And he showed those to third parties who clearly had zero security clearance.
The other thing is
that he was asked by the National Archives Agency to return these documents once they were in his they were in his possession. He lied about it. He obstructed their work, ultimately obstructing the work of the FBI when they got involved because he was not complying. So the only person Donald Trump has to blame for his predicament tonight is Donald Trump.
Thomas?
Right, but you know, the other major concern, the thing that makes me wake up at night in a cold sweat, is that Trump was really chummy-chummy with Vladimir Putin, and Trump is also really chummy-chummy with the Saudis, and there's no telling who else Trump has been chummy-chummy with, and it makes me wonder if he wasn't siphoning off classified information to foreign powers in exchange for favors and privileges. And I mean, he there's every reason to believe the man was selling out the White House whichever way he could.
I saw an interview with his former Secretary of State, another, you know, turned Trump critic, John Bolton, and he was sort of, apart from the fact he's sort of almost bewildered by this, he was sort of asked why, and he said, that's the question that we don't have the answer to. Mm-hmm. Now, Bolton thought it might be a stretch that he would be trying to sell documents, so he didn't rule anything out, but he said, yet there's no obvious rational explanation for this. He thought it might have more to do with his sort of ego, and, you know, we'd have these documents to show to people about how important he once was. We just don't know. What you're saying, Thomas, can't be ruled out. Nothing could be ruled out here. But
no, I'm not ruling it out.
It is a mystery as to how he has ended up in this self-inflicted position. From Sydney, Australia, Henry O'Donovan on
Bondi Tunes International. If you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia, and I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Winnipeg, Canada, and Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bayar in Texas. And, a beer. A beer coming across the world, 13,500 miles, and it's arrived in 3 seconds.
It's amazing.
Yes, I love a beer at 14 NBN minutes.
NBN is wonderful now, isn't it?
It's 14 minutes past 1 in the afternoon. My girlfriend's going to kill me. Just to mention, Dawn Drost is another of our North America correspondents. She's in Orlando, Florida, and she may join us at any time. Now, I just want to do an audio grab of Trump talking to his faithful after his arraignment. Take a listen.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. It's a great honor to have you here. And today we witness the most evil and heinous abuse of power in the history of our country. Very sad thing to watch. A corrupt sitting president had his top political opponent arrested on fake and fabricated charges of which he and numerous other presidents would be guilty. Right in the middle of a presidential election in which he's losing very badly. This is called election interference and yet another attempt to rig and steal a presidential election. More importantly, it's a political persecution like something straight out of a fascist or a communist nation.
Okay, now, nothing ever changes. Trump loyalists stay loyal no matter what happens to him, guys, eh?
Yeah.
They never change. It never changes.
No, he said this himself. He could go down Fifth Avenue in New York and shoot somebody.
Shoot somebody, yeah.
And they still support him. It doesn't seem to matter what kind of charges or cases or it's all the witch hunt. You know, it's a witch hunt. It's I had a row with someone on Facebook who used to be quite a normal, rational person. He was a Republican, but, you know, he proudly had a photo in his house of him with Ronald Reagan in the White House.
You know what? I always find that, you know, Trump, you know, after Trump, Ronald Reagan seems quite presentable to me, you know.
Yeah, there are things going on with Ronnie.
It does remind me all these years later of how, you know, 1930s dictators emerged, because again they were some described clownish, almost ridiculous figures. Mussolini and even Hitler and Franco and, you know what I mean, the big buffoon type figures. So that's the kind of parallel that I see with tough economic times, a large amount of people feeling displaced, feeling that their entitlement to the American dream is gone, and reaching for, as I say, buffoonish type figures, but offering utopian solutions, but also they're ready to blame the other.
I just, you know, Ronan, you've been mentioning all these world leaders and the rogues that got into power, and it brought up a song from the 1970s, The Stranglers and No More Heroes. Let's just listen to that song now. Because, you know, in the 70s, I didn't really listen to the words, but take a listen to this.
Whatever happened to Leon Trotsky. He got an ice pick that made his ears burn. Whatever happened to you, dear old Lenny, the great Omira and Sancho Panza?
Okay, you see, I didn't realize in the 70s that the Stranglers were pretty smart. That is a really good song, isn't it?
No, it is. I mean, everything is cyclical. You know, you know the 30s, we had the Second World War, obviously, and the terrible thing it was, but necessary to defeat Nazism. Then sort of the Cold War, but the West, if you look at sort of the 50s, the 60s, it enjoyed incredible prosperity as economies took off. But and there's been prosperity since, but the difference has been is that prosperity has been far less even.
I just want to sidetrack here for a second. Ronan, you're from Ireland like me. Thomas, you're born and bred in San Antonio de Bayar in Texas. So you're an American. We're not. We're living in different countries. But people outside America find it fascinating that, you know, it's funny, there's always a presidential campaign going on in America. After the president gets in, let's say in January, I think is normally the time, then, you know, people, a whole campaign has started all over again. Mm-hmm. Then the midterms. And then mm-hmm. after the midterms, which are in November, 2 years right. later, it all starts again. It's like
yeah, everybody's
it's
perpetually running for
it's
office.
It's yes. a constant race for the White House. You know, we do get a break in other parts of the world from this. You know,
I mean, it's hard to believe that the first set of Republican primary debates will happen in the fall, you know, mm-hmm. and it does go on for an insane amount of time. I mean, there's talk of Governor Newsom, who's the governor yeah. of California, potentially challenging Biden. The only other challenges he has are Robert Kennedy Jr., who is the son of Bobby Kennedy, but has become a kind of anti-vaxxer conspiracy theory type. And who was, remember Thomas, that weird lady that ran the last time who was into this kind of, I don't know, was it psychic healing or something? Marianne Williamson?
Marianne Williamson, yeah. She, matter of fact, yeah. she had a couple of appearances in Bill Maher.
Yeah,
and she was actually...
Again.
Yeah, she was into all the candles and the aura, reading auras yeah, and all that kind of stuff.
I don't think either Robert Kennedy Jr. or Marianne are going to be troubling Biden. Newsom might, but I suspect he won't run. And it will just be a coronation for Joe that he will not have to do that much campaigning in the primaries. It'll just be a coronation at the convention. But what's unknown, the polls are still showing, you know, Trump has sort of 81% of the GOP and would win the primary. But will more and more indictments shift this? Will there be some moment of reckoning where somebody sort of says, you know, we just can't run him? It's an absolute certain defeat.
Sorry, I just want to get back, well, over to Biden, really. We haven't talked much about him, and he hasn't talked much at all. He's been...
He's keeping his mouth shut.
He's smart. He doesn't need to do anything.
Right. No, nor should he. Mm. The line here is that this is an independent investigation. In fact, his attorney general, Merrick Garland, to secure, you know, independence, appointed this independent special prosecutor, Jack Smith. So no, there's going to be no public comment or statement by Joe Biden. I'm sure his private thoughts are the thing on the matter.
You'd want to be a fly on the wall, that's for sure, in his office.
I'm sure he and Jill have had a few conversations about it, and he's spoken to, you know, his advisors around it, but he's not going to, I mean, the point at which, and it'll have to be done with care, is if he does end up in a race with Trump, and there are all these charges still pending, and these cases still pending, but he'll cross that bridge when it comes to it.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, I was watching BBC World News, and a reporter said, you know, this could go on for months, if not years. And yes, in that context, doesn't it seem that he could actually be still going through all this when the federal election happens, not this November, but next November?
Yeah, a year from November, yes.
How, can
That's
he do
exactly
that?
The concern. Can well, because there's that? Nothing in the Constitution that says he can't.
It's bizarre. If there's a federal election, which there will be in November 2024, can he still run from his house? Run from his house. You know what I mean?
Yes, he could. I think, however, surely to God, at that point, someone in the Republican Party would say this is absolute insanity. If he were elected, he would be confined to his house in Mar-a-Lago. Perhaps there'd be arguments that he could then pardon himself. But that's assuming that you know, his confinement is related to federal offences. If he was, for example, convicted in Georgia under Georgia state law and was sentenced to terms of imprisonment, no federal pardon is going to fix that. So I do think at that point that the Republican would say, oh, we're running DeSantis, we're doing something else. And I still actually believe that DeSantis is the most likely candidate in 2024 with all of this.
How will he do? How will DeSantis, and just for our listeners who may not know, DeSantis is the governor, is that right, of Florida?
He's the governor of Florida.
And he's right-wing, but he's a bit smarter than Trump, and that's a kind of a concern, isn't it? Because he is going for presidency.
Yes, he's a smart criminal. Yes.
And he's an extremist. I wish Dawn was here, because she is in Florida, but she's not here at the moment with us on our airwaves. But the thing is, he's doing all sorts of crazy stuff in the state of Florida with regard to schools, etc. I mean, how can he...
Where woke goes to die.
He may be able to convince the people of Florida, and clearly he is, because he got back in with a very healthy number. But will he convince the other 49 states of America with this kind of rhetoric?
Well, legislation in Texas is following in his footsteps, and so they're starting a whole book banning process and all the other little anti-woke.
Didn't Hitler do that in the 40s?
Yes, there were. I mean, that's what the book burning was all about. Yes.
I still believe that the winner of the 2024 U.S. presidential election will be Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.
Okay, and I love the word junior. It's so appropriate.
Junior and 80, whatever it is. Yeah.
Your good friend around the planet on iTunes International.
If you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, where it's nice and sunny and cold. I love it. Ronan Seagrave is in Winnipeg, Canada. Dawn Dross could join us even at this late hour. And Thomas Booker is in San Antonio de Bayar, Texas. Now, as we record, folks, it's Donald Trump's 77th birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday, Mr. Ex-President. Where the hell is Marilyn Monroe when I need her?
Where's Melania? Is she making the cake today? She wasn't.
Oh, I'm sure she's in the kitchen. Yeah, barefoot and pregnant.
I've got the divorce papers, Donald.
Yes, happy birthday. To the batter, too.
So it is his 77th birthday. What age is Joe Biden? Is he 80?
Yes,
he's 80. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So all the presidents are old, or the potential presidents, I should say. It really is, you know, people keep on, especially Fox News and the other right-wing media, keep on using Joe Biden's age against him. He tripped over something on a stage, as you
know. It was
a
sandbag that was behind the podium. It was stabilizing a microphone. And it was, he tripped, but he got back up, and he's... He didn't break anything, so he's pretty spry, and it happens.
Well, what do you guys think? You know, is 80 I mean, you know, things have changed. People are living longer. Clearly, Joe Biden is a smart man, and he's got so much behind him. You know, being foreign secretary, he's been in politics forever, and he's got all this experience, unlike, let's say, Donald Trump or DeSantis, for that matter. Does age matter anymore?
No, I think, you know, it matters if there were to be... He had his physical some time ago and said he was fine. It would matter if, which was the case with Ronald Reagan, and it was sort of kept hidden,
yes,
that cognitive decline is becoming apparent. I think that is an issue, but there's no evidence that that's the case with Joe Biden. People say he gets a bit forgetful, but anybody of 80 does. But there's no
I get forgetful, and I'm only 60.
Yeah, you know, there's no evidence to suggest that Joe Biden is being impaired in any way because of his health in relation to discharging his duties as president. Indeed, far from it.
Yeah. The demonstration of his competence was how he handled the
Your age, man.
I'm
70,
and I'm not. Budget negotiation.
Absolutely.
The whole budget process.
Man in the room.
He played Congress perfectly, and gave him a few little crumbs, and they seemed to go away. And he managed to save the integrity of the United States economy. So I think that counts for something for sure. I got an email. Something popping up in my email, and it was telling me, "Boy, Mr. Booker," because my name is now Mr. Booker. What happened was years ago, I donated first to the Hillary Clinton presidency and Barack Obama's presidency.
Your name will always
I donated.
Be
and so now I get this crap from all these people. And so there was this one thing about Rachel Maddow is smashing, crushing Fox News. Thomas, you got to get in on this. And this whole big spiel about that at the end of it, of course. What do you think about Rachel Maddow? And then the next box down was, can you donate 50 or 50?
Yeah, we want your money.
We want your money.
Rachel Maddow is a powerhouse on MSNBC, which is a left-of-center news network in America. CNN has gone decidedly towards the middle, with the likes of Bill Maher getting a small section on that network, which just quite amazes me. There's a new boss of CNN. I don't know his name offhand, but he's changing things, isn't he?
I think they were bringing him in because the CNN was now being lost. It was like this cast adrift between MSNBC and Fox, and then all the other Newsmax and the other OAN. And so they were trying to come up with some way that maybe that CNN could appeal to the middle. And so it was one of the first things they tried to do was to have the Trump open discussion. And then later on, the Nikki Haley on to have her own little audience. I mean, it had a pro-Nikki Haley audience and a pro-Trump audience and a moderator who was trying to be a journalist. And it turned out to be a catastrophe that people are still, disgusted over.
I'm just wondering, I wonder, now talking of CNN and the media in general, I would like to visit that bar where Chris Cuomo, from ex of CNN, and Don Lemon are having a couple of stiff drinks. And
that would be a good conversation, wouldn't it?
It would be a very interesting conversation. They were best mates. They live very close to each other. And Don would go over to Chris Cuomo's house for barbecues with Chris Cuomo's kids. Then the media says that they fell out because when Cuomo got unceremoniously kicked off CNN, then Don got kicked off CNN, and now they're left with Ronan in Canada. They're left really with the small itsy-bitsy networks.
All kind of Mickey Mouse networks. It's probably where Don Lemon will end up. CNN has made this sort of, for 4 years, its raison d'etre was every night presenter after presenter attacking Donald Trump. So it gave it a kind of the counter to sort of Hannity and those other shows that were going out in Fox News at that time, Tucker Carlson. So it gave the kind of counterbalance to that. But you take away Donald Trump, they're not going to spend hour after hour attacking Joe Biden. So it sort of lost its kind of then purpose, and drifted, in my opinion, in terms of who exactly was its target audience and who was it aiming at. Now there's going to be yet another change in leadership, and we'll see where that goes. There's been sort of a bit of an obsession with comedians, as you're saying, Henry, with with Bill Maher and ongoing efforts to try and land, you know, people like Trevor Noah and Jon Stewart keep being mentioned as potentially CNN.
But that's the problem also. Once again, bashing Democrats. The one horrible thing about Democrats are they cannot present facts. They cannot present coherent and clear factual arguments. So there's something wrong with their organization.
Bill Maher's always saying that, you know.
Yeah, Bill Maher. Yeah. But I mean, yes,
it becomes hysteria. And we know Donald Trump is awful, but let's have some facts here. Let's have. Beyond that, what would you do?
Ronan, are you saying fair and balanced news? Oh, really? Did I just say that?
Don might be knocking at the door. I just got a message from her. You want to see if she wants to pop in?
Yep, sure.
For sure.
And I want to talk about what's going on in Canada in a minute with regards to schools experimenting with cell phone bans. And Dawn would be interested in
giving... Great, yes.
And in fact, we'll switch over to that now, and hopefully Dawn will manage to get online here. Now, Canadian schools are experimenting with a cell phone or mobile phones, if you're listening outside America. We all understand this anyway because we watch American TV. But some parents say the devices...
I called you on my cell phone. Yeah,
some parents say that these devices are lifelines, and I totally agree with that. Isn't it amazing that you can give your teenager a phone and say, call me? You know, in the old days when you let your teenager, or let's say preteen, out to play, you said, I'll see you when you get home. Now, mom says, text me when you get there. You know?
No, absolutely.
Ronan, in Canada, tell me what's going on with this, because it's interesting, because I've often wondered about mobile phones or cell phones in schools.
There's been a lot of, and it's been going on for a number of years, a lot of concern around this. And again, this has revolved around the use of social media or even horrors like sexting, bullying, bullying people online or social media. And there've been a couple of quite horrific high profile cases in Canada, particularly of young teenage girls committing suicide. Relentless.
Is this related to mobile phones or social media on mobile phones?
It's the kids actually using the mobile phones at school to post stuff and even pictures of people, so that they're using their phones to do that. So that's the other arguments, Henry, are that they're a distraction. Yes, they could be used in terms of people having access to the internet or other things to aid schoolwork, but they're also seen as potentially a big distraction. You know, people are too busy posting on Instagram or looking at or doing TikTok.
Right. It becomes obsessive behavior.
Yeah, it becomes obsessive. So a number of schools in Canada are experimenting with your kids can bring their phones to school, but they're then sort of locked away in a locker, and they don't get their phones back until after the school day. Now, there is a reason why, but with my daughter, she has had a phone since about the age of 12, 13, and the reason for that was when she started taking the school bus on her own to go to school. So, and it was quite a bit of a distance. So you have the phone. If there's any issue or anything goes, you have the phone. You can text. So distance is a factor in Canada.
Of course, like Australia, they have
to travel significant distances on their own is a reason why many kids and many parents, like myself, when it came to it, decide, yeah, it's better for safety reasons that they have a phone. But now school is trying to balance that off, saying, yeah, that's all well and good, but when they get to school, let's lock away the phone, stop that A, from being a distraction, or B, being used in any way to bully or harass other students.
It's interesting, last month an Ontario high school teacher wrote anonymously, which I find interesting, an open letter.
Henry, in Canada, like doctors, nurses, writing anonymously. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that's kind of weird. Anyway, decrying student-on-teacher violence. Where does that play into the use of mobile phones?
Well, this would play into, again, harassing teachers at school, photographing them, and potentially then using that. There have been issues in TikTok videos and mocking teachers, putting pictures of teachers on other social media and basically promoting hate, and indeed that potentially leading to violence.
I might inject also that the social media on phones have been a lot of the things that have driven mentally unstable students to go get a rifle and go shoot up schools. Absolutely. In Texas.
No, that's of a concern here, but it is more the sort of bullying, the cases we've had, tragic cases and terrible cases we've had of young teenagers taking their lives because of awful and horrific bullying online, and again with teachers being attacked and hate being promoted against teachers on social media.
Sorry, Sachin Maharaj was interviewed by CBC in Canada, the national broadcaster. He's an assistant professor of educational leadership. And to your point, he says cell phones have a large impact on students' mental health. And this is the crux of this, isn't it?
Oh, totally. I mean, everything in moderation, in my view. There is the argument that young teenagers, in particular 12, 13, in particular when they start transitioning from to middle school, as we call it here, middle school and then high school, that's usually a significant step and usually involves longer transportation, even if you're living in a city or an urban area, and certainly if you're in a more rural area, that the phone is important in relation to safety and being able to keep in contact, and if something goes wrong, those are all valid and legitimate arguments, and where in the case of my daughter, where this goes wrong is then the use of these phones in terms of social media, in terms of then being used in a highly inappropriate way in schools, even taking inappropriate photographs and changing all of these issues.
Yeah.
They're on to something and just locking them up during the day.
Yeah, educators who are against a ban say phones can be included in teaching, which is interesting.
They can.
At least one school that tried that ended up banning the devices when those plans fell apart. No shit.
Funny enough, we're on TikTok or Instagram and not actually looking at, I don't know, some history website or something. Yeah.
Others say phones are an important link between school and home, especially for students at risk of violence. Now, look, call me old-fashioned, but I was in boarding school, so it's kind of a different scenario for me. But, you know, people survived without mobile phones forever, until the 1990s. I don't know whether we're just...
Well, here's another argument, Henry.
And
we were talking briefly about artificial intelligence and our old friend ChatGPT.
Oh, yes.
See students at their desk, you know, being given an exam question and just going, ChatGPT, tell me the answer to, or how would you write something? So that's actually an issue. And I think as artificial intelligence becomes more ubiquitous, how schools manage this in terms of access to mobile phones or the forms of technology, and actually the use of artificial intelligence as teaching and particularly in relation to sort of projects and exams and things that are actually quite profound. And I think we're going to see a lot of focus on this in the next year or two, is really, like everything else in life, the education system adjusts to this. But you can see right now, I know of a school that just singularly because of ChatGPT being downloaded on children's phones has banned the use of
Can they get AI to help them with essays and stuff?
Oh, God.
Surely they can.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, hello. Dawn Dross has joined us from Orlando, Florida.
From Orlando, Florida, Dawn Dross.
Actually, if I may, I have something to interject about the banning of the phones.
Yes, please.
For violence as well.
You've got two. Because I just want to let our listeners know you've got two kids, teenagers.
Yep. I do, yes. Mm. And sorry, I'm late. One of my dogs decided to break through the fence tonight to go chasing a coyote. And So that was it's Florida. What can I say?
Yes.
My son's school, I don't allow my kids on much social media at all. My son, I don't allow him on it at all. He's 13. My daughter, I allow on YouTube because she's an artist and she has a channel that she publishes her animation on. That's it. Beyond that, I can say that every threat that came into his school this year, and there were a number of them that we only found out about because they were found on social media. And it was because a parent had seen their child's post and reported it to the police, or another student saw a student threaten to commit violence, to shoot up the school, and saw them with weapons. Yes. Or they, this would even be a student at another school was threatening to come to my son's school and commit an act of violence. And the students were doing the right thing in alerting the authorities. But because of the phones being at school, sometimes they didn't find out about this until they were on campus in the morning having breakfast. And then we would get the calls that there had been a threat coming in. And that is very scary to know. So it is something that I am, because now it has become illegal in Florida, starting next school year, they are not going to allow you to have the phones on campus at all. And it is something that I think, because of how many threats, I think my son missed close to 30 days of school this year. Half of those were simply because of the amount of threats that they were not able to clear.
Wow.
So Dawn, from your perspective, as we mentioned, you've got two teenagers. Where do you draw the line on any kind of ban with kids, not just in school, but generally? Obviously, you can restrict them so they're not calling, you know, overseas and costing a fortune. You can restrict them from X-rated material. Is this all true? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I actually have a device that I keep in my room that I control with an app. And I can turn off at will and set timing restrictions for any device in the house. And so after certain time periods at night, the phones get turned off. There are certain websites that you can't go to.
So, Dawn, there's no knocking on people's, you know, the kids' doors anymore. They're watching, they're on TikTok, and they're going, yeah, I'm having great fun. Oh, it's all switched off.
It's all switched off. I go in there immediately and just say, no, you're not going to this website, you're not going to this website, you're not going to this website. And I just go in there and I turn it off. And, you know, ChatGPT is not the only thing you need to worry about. I have an app on my phone for when I help my daughter with her virtual school. Two of them. One of them is called PhotoMath, and one of them is called Brainly. And what you do is you just open it and you can take a picture of a math problem, or it will scan the question on the computer, and it will then crowdsource the answers.
Oh my god.
Cheat.
Gosh.
Oh boy. Yeah.
And you know what? They're free and they haven't been wrong yet. And I guarantee you, I was informed about this by my daughter's third grade teacher, who told me that I should get her a phone when she was still in a brick and mortar school, who said I should get her a phone and put it on it for her.
This sounds kind of dangerous to me. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
So it's something I use now because, you know, they've changed math. So it just went from like normal math to now it's what I call stupid math, because now it's not, you can't just do the math problem. Now you have to do, you know, you can't just do what's 8 times 4. You have to do it in like, you have to answer it by doing, you know, like 33 steps. including like an Irish jig to complete it. And you have to like sacrifice a potato to a some sort of deity. It's, you can't just do the math problem anymore. So it's, that's, it will answer it in that way, so that, because I don't get the new math, because I don't know who went around and decided that math was too hard the way it was. So they were like, let's just confuse everybody born before 2010.
Good Lord. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, Canada is, there is, I don't know how much you heard of this, Dawn, you know, considering yes. banning mobile phones or cell phones in schools.
We're doing it. That's what's going to happen here next year. So, yeah, yes, I heard it, and I can, I'm, from the perspective of the educators, I can understand it. I can see it. From the perspective of a parent, I'm terrified, because I live in Florida where we have guns, and that is the biggest threat we've had. My son's been locked down because there was an armed intruder on campus. Mm-hmm. I've gotten the call where he had to call me from the room, and he didn't know what was going to happen. I heard him and all of his students crying their eyes out. He gave another student what was in his lunch because he was trying to calm down other kids by offering them snacks.
This is Everett, is it?
Yes, but he himself was still terrified, and he was calling me to say goodbye because he didn't know what was going to happen.
Oh my God, you're telling us stuff that we keep seeing on television.
And it turns out that, you know, they got rid of them and it was okay, but there, then there was the next week, they found a gun one day, and then they found the bullets the next day hidden by a separate trash can. Somebody had snuck those in, and they were prepared to do a shooting. This is what I'm dealing with every single week at his school. I want phones there.
Just want to let our listeners know that Ron DeSantis is the governor of this state. He got back in a recent election, and it wasn't very hard for him to do that. He had the numbers. No. And he is, you know, he's obviously pro-guns. And yes, this is not helping your situation, Dawn.
The grant, yes, he's already made the state permitless open carry. That is where we are now. We've already had one mass shooting on a beach. No one was killed, but there were seven people were shot. Two of them were kids.
Ronan, in Canada, do you? I mean, I'm always comparing Canada to America because you happen to be in Canada, so you're it. Do they have the? I mean, obviously they don't have the same problems as they have in the United States. But is there any of that rubbing off on young Canadian? I know, just like Australia, they have strict rules with regard to, you know, obtaining guns. But do they have anything like that, given that you are the neighbour of the United States?
No. I mean, the only way a younger person, school age, could get a gun is illegally. There is very, very strict controls even around sort of teenagers who want to take up the sport of pistol shooting, which is an Olympic sport, and in relation to hunting. But no, the only way someone of that age will get their hands on a gun is illegally and through sort of fairly serious crime. So we don't, you know, that's just terrific what Dom was saying. We don't have that. Mm. But I think what we do have is other serious issues. And I know these issues are in the United States, they're in Australia. And you know, I still remember that case. It was a couple of years after I came to Canada, and she was like a 15-year-old girl in British Columbia in Vancouver, and she was just bullied online mercilessly every single day to the point that she committed suicide. And I think that
happens here too.
Got a lot of national coverage in Canada, and that was kind of a wake-up call to what is it we're doing. Are we doing the right things in relation to when and in what way kids should have access to mobile phones in particular, which is, you know, the majority of how this stuff is actually put online, sometimes obviously on home computers, but often on the phone. And then that leading to wider issues around the use of these, use of mobile phones in school, now becoming, as Dawn was saying, even more complicated by artificial intelligence applications that can be downloaded on phones. So there's another angle around the issue. And how we sort of deal with that. I do think, though, that I read an article yesterday that it's at a bottom moment for me. When we are moving, whether we like it or not, into this world of artificial intelligence, so there's all sorts of big issues around the threat and around regulation. But I do think its impact around just about everything, including the education system, and is going to be absolutely profound. And we're going to have to adjust and adapt. And this article was presenting a more positive view that if we got this right, and we don't end up having, you know, AI, you know, causing a nuclear war or whatever, that mm-hmm. how adults and others could develop could change positively. In other words, that we're encouraging kids less around absorbing or relentlessly memorizing things to more using artificial intelligence. We're quite frankly, we don't need to do that anymore, but actually focusing much more on getting people to think creatively, getting to think people around problem solving, and getting to think how they would integrate this type of technology into a very different working world. So it does have for me, if, and it's a massive if, we get this right, it does have some positive benefits.
You know, we will, by the way, we're just going over time here, but what the hell, we're free radio. Thomas, in Texas, you are in a right-wing state, and that's an understatement, just like Dawn is in Florida. What's the general consensus on the whole business of guns? I mean, this is a rhetorical question, obviously. You are like in a desert, Thomas, because you are a liberal. I think it's fair to say that. And you're surrounded by 99% Texans. Are you alone, like a howling wolf?
I'm a Republican in that order. Yeah.
What's it like? I mean, I must ask you, Dawn, because it's a bit like that for you. I remember, you know, Florida used to be a swing state. Am I fair in saying that it's not really a swing? I mean, it used to be the crux of who became the president.
It swung. It used to swing. Now it's swung.
Yeah,
we are firmly in the grasp of Grand Wizard DeSantis now.
Is there any hope? Is there any hope?
No.
Well, no, Texas,
not at this point in time.
Texas is working
not for legislation. Florida, no.
It's basing it on the banning books and the whole thing. They're picking up the DeSantis package and selling it here in Texas, which is pretty amazing. The problem, basically in Texas, the urban areas, so urban Dallas-Fort Worth area and urban Houston and of course, Austin is, you know, it's a lefty town, and urban San Antonio was also as progressive as it can be. But then the problem is we're surrounded by suburbs and rural states. And that's where all the conservatism lies. And we're still having the argument that we had somebody going, a kid with a cell phone who was being bullied and angered in Uvalde, Texas. And he goes out and buys himself an AR-15 at age 18 on the same day, and then takes it to school and shoots the school up. And we're still going through. I mean, this is basically how it went down. We have other shootings. You know, I can go through the whole list of them. But the idea of banning weapons, I mean, it's the rest of the state, the major population of the state that votes and has political control will not tolerate the idea. And in politics, they would not tolerate the idea of any politician advocating for raising the minimum age, banning assault rifles, any of that stuff. Mm. It's just not going to happen. So
basically, Thomas, the NRA is running America. Just
and
before,
Texas, sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. They're just voting the NRMA. Sorry, the NRMA. That's the
NRMA. Australian, that's good.
Motor Vehicle Association. I'm in the NRA, the National Rifle Association in America. Dawn, you joined us a little bit late, so I just want to get quickly. Just want to get your views on the ex-president of the United States, Donald Trump, and his arraignment in your state of Florida.
Well, I think it is wonderful that Jack Smith has been able to secure the very large indictment, all 49 pages and 37 counts of it. I am saddened that it is in Miami, because that is a very Republican area. Oh, yeah. Orlando, unfortunately, I think is pretty much the last Democratic bastion in the state. And
doesn't it have to be in Florida because of Mar-a-Lago, where he lives?
Yes, and it had to be in the district of where it happened. Okay. And the judge that is going to preside over it is one of the judges that he has in his pocket. This is the one that appointed the special master and did all of the other delays that he wanted around the seizure and the search warrant of these originally. So I don't think that the judge is going to do Jack Smith any favors, but I think it is a good thing. I was happy to see that there were some people out there today that had signs that say lock him up, including one that was wearing a prison jumpsuit, and they tried to jump out in front of his motorcade as he was getting driven away, but
that would have been interesting
so he could see it. And the MAGA people grabbed him and tackled him, and he got swallowed by the crowd, and I almost immediately, but not before he was able to get out in front of that car and hold up that sign. And
which, of course, the media would have jumped on.
Oh, yeah, a helicopter got it from overhead, including him getting swallowed by the crowd. It was fantastic. But I feel bad because that poor man, he probably didn't make it home tonight. So that's
the thing is, the dichotomy of all this is that he's more likely to go to jail than Donald Trump.
That's it. That's exactly it. Yes. That's civil disobedience. That's it. In Florida, that's what it is now. Mm-hmm. In Florida, you can run over protesters.
Yes, that's right.
The laws that you can run over protesters. Good because Lord. That's what DeSantis wants to happen. That as long, he made all of this because he was trying to make it very anti. This was going on during all of the Black Lives Matter protests and anything that he considered woke. So you could run down protesters. You could shoot them if you felt you were threatened. And
what's DeSantis' term about woke? Florida is where woke goes to die.
Yeah. And it was just the anniversary of the Pulse shooting.
Oh yes,
a couple of days ago.
Which is how
someone had tried to troll the Pulse families.
Oh no!
Here in Orlando, in the neighborhood of the nightclub, you don't do that here. You don't do that right around the memorial. And apparently when people tried to call him on it, he said he did it because it had been a while since he had played Poke Woke. I'd never even heard that. And apparently this is what they're doing now in the area and in Florida, that it's just like a game, that they're instigating all of the Democrats that are left by playing what they call Poke Woke.
Good Lord.
I'm just like, great, this is the hellscape that I live in.
Yes, indeed. Oh my goodness, we've gone way over time. I want to do a special on AI because it is a huge issue and it's on our doorstep. In fact, it's in the door. It's in the house now. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I would like to thank Ronan Seagrave in Canada, Dawn Drost in Florida, and Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bayer in Texas. Thank you for joining me, and thanks for the beard.
Thank you, Henry. This conversation has been very enlightening.
Damn, AI has just taken over Thomas. I hope AI drinks beer.
It would have been much more awkward. It would have just been like, thank you so much, this conversation. Enlightening, thank you. It would have just kind of slightly missed words.
Yeah, because
like
they never get it right. They're not humans. okay, guys, thanks so much for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
Pleasure as always, Henry.
Yeah, we lost control, Henry. I just think.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Henry O'Donovan.